Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Right, welcome back to Tip TV Finance. I'm joined by my co-host, who's Mike Ingram, a strategist at BGC Partners, and by Sean Richards from Not a Yes Man Economics. How are you today, Sean?
Good, thank you.
Right, we are in the run-up to the Fed announcement of not much, I suppose, later this evening. Do you have any particularly new take on what they might be doing, or a differing one to the market, the 10% probability of a rate hike?
Not massively. They've occupied almost every position they could this year, haven't they, so far? And so then they could be almost anywhere later on. They could surprise everyone, but that in the current environment, sending out a surprise like that would be of, let me see, Bundesbank levels about 20 years ago, which it loved doing that sort of thing.
I remember that. Yeah, those were the days, weren't they?
But there was the best one of all was actually when they announced the move. Reuters said it was a raise and Telerate said it was a drop. And times have changed, different news services then, but they were the two of the main three. And I was on the live floor at the time, and yes, it did create bedlam. An irony, because of course the actual original bedlam's only around the corner from the live floor.
Right. What I was trying to hint at was that actually the right thing for them to do would be to raise rates now. You've got all the economic data through the roof, boiling at boiling point, and all the excuses that they've had, which they've raked from various places around the world, are not actually an influence on the US economy.
Well, on a subject that hopefully we'll get to in a minute, if you think ahead in terms of monetary policy, they should have been doing it this time last year.
Right.
Instead of hinting and that, because if they do it now, it'll operate somewhere around the opening of 2018, if you look at the lags in the system, which by then might not be right.
Their agenda, though, the reason that I can understand it, because otherwise I don't think I could ever understand it, is just to keep the stock market going up, house prices going up, and that's what central banks do now.
In essence, that seems to be...
And that's fine.
Asset prices is what central banking policy, in essence, has become. Yes.
And no need to fight it. No need to doubt it. Just wade in there with your 0.1% mortgage or whatever rate it is, and minus negative rates coming up on deposit. Just not fight it at all.
Well, I mean, of course you can fight it, but the famous examples of this we've seen are sort of like in Japan, where the arguments that Japanese bond yields would soar, we actually now face a 10-year yield of a bit below minus 2%, depending on how it's flicking around, somewhere around minus a quarter currently, which means that even from the ultra low levels that people thought it would rise from, it's fallen again. So those that have fought it, in purely domestic terms, have lost. Of course, there's then a more complicated issue on the currency. They might have lost on that too, might have gained. But it's a very complicated picture. But if we return to the thing of central bank control, one thing we can be reasonably clear of is that the Bank of Japan has not had control over the yen in recent times.
I mean, if you look at the broad arc of monetary policy, I guess, ex the US, I mean, isn't it fairly clear that the playbook's looking pretty threadbare at this point? And there has been a fiscal dimension to many of the unorthodox monetary policies which have been rolled out in recent years. But we're now, basically, there's no pretense. We're looking at potentially complete debt monetization, helicopter money, and of course in Japan's case, you know, outright fiscal expansion plus everything else as well. I mean, is that where we are at the moment? Is it we are, because it does feel in terms of policy, we have changed gear. And I don't think it's something the markets have totally...
I mean, it's not even a quip, it's just a comment. It's like a financial, it's like a central bank comb over. which, you know, you're literally taking the hair from here and trying to put it over the top of the head and putting it over there. That's that we're at minus negative interest rates.
You mean very Bobby Charlton stuff?
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. We've got, you know, it's like that, and it's just flapping on the side and everything else. So I mean, we're in that type, but nobody can tell the central banks, you know, get a haircut. Or haven't you thought of shaving or shaving your head?
I think that there are some dissenters. I mean, if we look to the Bank of Japan, there has been dissent, which in Japanese culture is quite something, the idea of face. And for people at an official organisation like that to say no. Saying no in Japanese is quite complicated in many respects, slightly different here. But even so, no.
We had a bit of that with the referendum campaign.
Well, negative interest rates only went through on a 5-4 vote, didn't they? Although there has been some reshuffling of the board since then.
More of the more recent votes are sort of 8-1, 8-2, that sort of thing. But even the one there matters a lot. Sure. You know, and I suspect probably next week we're in line for something similar in the UK, because we've seen the flip-flopping, U-turning, Kylie Minogue terms spinning around, dead or alive terms, you spin me around like a record.
Yeah, my whole life's flashing probably in front of me.
Martin Will, the Bank of England, who only a week ago was sure that he wasn't going to support it. Only yesterday changed his mind completely. Then today, we had actually quite good GDP numbers from the UK, up 0.6. If you look into the detail, may not be the growth that you might think, so people understand it was 0.4 in the first quarter. A lot of it came in April. Production, narrow that down to manufacturing, some of that pharmaceuticals. So if you take that link, you could say that so the first half of the UK's year was reasonably even. Very, very brief flicker into the post-Brexit era, because there was about a week of that in. Yes. Although, again, one has to be careful. In the initial release for UK stuff, the final month, aka June, is mostly a forecast rather than actual numbers. But by going back to the point of Martin Will, he's now just about to finish his tenure in the Bank of England, which he never really ever got what he wanted, because he's spent a whole year in total voting for interest rate rises. Now, right at the end, it looks like if he can maintain a view for as long as a week, he'll vote for a cut.
But would it be fair to say that the performance of the UK economy probably hasn't followed the narrative, which has been a slowdown even ahead of the referendum, never mind what might have come out of the actual result itself. And also, the other question I was going to ask is, how seriously should we have taken those flash PMIs last week? Because it certainly seems to have figured very prominently in Martin Wheel's mind, for instance.
Well, if we go one at a time, as to the actual situation, I think that there was a slowdown in the UK economy, but it happened earlier in the period before this, somewhere around early spring. Then if we take the numbers we received at face value, there was a turn in production and manufacturing, both very welcome, whether we can say that's an actual turn or whether things will turn another way in. But that seemed to happen. I thought for a while we were going to see a dip, and I mean way before Brexit issues, that was still 2 or 3 months away, which in current estimates is a very long way. And then we saw a pickup. Now we come to the thing. I think what we can say is that the first half of the year for the UK was pretty stable, if we give a week for the Brexit thing. We're waiting to see. To move on to your second thing, if you look at the scale of what we've seen on PMI reports, where Greece has dropped into the low 30s, then a number of 47.7, in many respects, wasn't that bad. If you bring the number forward to say that they thought that that would be a minus 0.4% GDP reading, most places that sent that out followed the next bit, assuming that the rest of the time was like that. Now, everyone knows at that point the UK was in complete disarray. I'm not sure there was anyone that thought
standstill.
The political system would collapse. Yeah. Yep. Uncertainty, probably
Scotland's gone,
as high as it's ever been. Yep. Scotland's gone, or has there been even thought of Ireland, and so on and so forth. So there were a lot of issues that you might think would say that that was a bad time. So was Martin Will sensible to follow that? In my opinion, no. It may have told us something.
It's like Carney's initial appearance after the Brexit. That was also a knee-jerk reaction, wasn't it?
Yes, he's made 3 appearances, 2 of which I thought were reasonably solid central banking stuff. In essence, quoting the line of calm down and we'll do this and that. Yeah. The other thing where he had a good go at saying, I told you so, was very poor, because like Will's speech yesterday, it had impacts on the pound and that sort of thing. And also, open mouth operations, as I call it, by central bankers are supposed to generate stability, are they not? Not go, oh, I told you so, and then start singing along to REM's "It's the End of the World as We Know It."
But he's got a track record of that, hasn't he? He's got a track record. I mean, the Mansion House speech in, what was it, 2014, where he said, he basically said, "Well, I think interest rates are going to rise much sooner than the markets are thinking."
He did indeed.
And then later, when of course that proved not to be the case, "Oh, well, I wanted to introduce some two-way volatility," thinking, is that part of the Bank of England's remit as well?
Well, I'm now up to forward guidance version 21. Seeing as he started in the summer of 2013, that's been quite a lot of changes over that time period. Interestingly, we got a little bit of insight into this from Martin Wool. In the middle of his splashing around in the swimming pool, you could occasionally see a little bit through the splashes. One of them was that he doesn't like the way that financial markets are now discussed at the Bank of England. I find this fascinating on his view of QE, because I think that the Bank of England shouldn't do more asset purchases because gilt yields are now so low. How much lower do you think you're going to take them? And if, say, you do so, how much economic benefits are going to be? Not much and not much is my answer to that. But if he's not aware of where financial markets are, then I can understand why he's a fan. Ignorance is bliss. But he also came out of an interesting point, which is he got himself also in a mess over independence at the Bank of England, because he turned around and said in his time period, the Bank of England has been completely aligned with the Treasury, which is exactly what critics like me have been saying all over this period. Mm. And while they're all shouting independence, if they're exactly the same as the Treasury, what is the whole point of the Monetary Policy Committee? In some extent, what's the whole point of bringing in someone like Mark Carney? Because if they're going to do the same as what the government would have done,
say that. That's
why doesn't the government just simply do it? And
so he's inadvertently, literally, I mean, like, lifted the bonnet and let everybody see.
I believe this all along. Viewers may not be aware, I've argued for some time that members of the Bank of England should be elected. Simple thing, you stand up, I would stand. Let's be clear about this. But also, you then have the prospect that
he
could
be
voted off.
All three of us should stand.
Incompetence, you see? Simple, isn't it? Because there's quite a lot of incompetence going round. Well. And now, King's College London, I believe, will have Dr. Will's services going forwards. On what grounds would be the question I'd simply ask.
His stunning record at the Bank of England. But on that note, Sean Richards, not a yes man in economics and also future MPC member. Wonderful to see you today. We'll be back after the break.